Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Bog right here on Dave Martell YouTube channel and Odyssey. You can go find us on, I forget what the thing is for Odyssey, but go over to Odyssey, O-D-Y-S-E-E, and type in Dave Martell and you'll find us. You can also follow me over on my Telegram over at t.me/boglord. But we are here every single Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. Unfortunately, we haven't been on for a while. I'm very sorry about that. Computer problems. You know what I mean? Just computer problems here. It's just like one thing after another, you know. But I upgraded my internet. We got the super fast internet now. I got some new hardware. So hopefully this is enough to get us going and back on track for the Bog every single week. But if you like the Bog, you support the Bog, make sure you go to patreon.com/thebog and sign up. There's a tier for everybody, $5 all the way up to $50. You get a hat. You get a mug. You get a sticker. And most importantly, you get RSS feed so you can listen to the audio of every single show that we do to listen to in your car, at work, at the gym, or on your commutes. That is patreon.com/thebog. If you want to support the Bog another way, make sure you go to shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop. Man, winter's coming. Winter's coming. Get yourself a sweet Bog hoodie available over there at shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop. All kinds of stuff over there. Go check it out. If you want to support a friend of ours, make sure you go to facebook.com/ironagejodish and check out some authentic ancient Vedic astrology. It's really, really cool stuff. Mr. Neil John is a genius. It's great. You're going to love it. facebook.com/ironagejodish. If you decide to get a reading, tell them Big Dave sent you. Guys, the Bizarre Archives, Weird Tales of Monsters, Magic, and Machines has been an absolute smash hit. Smash hit. Hundreds of copies sold around the world, over a dozen different countries. It's crushing it. We're crushing it. And so much love to you guys that got your copy of Bizarre Archives Issue 1. If you loved your copy, make sure you go to Amazon or Books A Million or whatever distributor you bought it from and go leave us a good review over there. Tell us what your favorite story was. But everybody, stay in your seats because coming up from Bizarre Archives, not only do we have Bizarre Archives Issue 2 coming out in December, we also have Bizarre Archives Presents a Weird... Bizarre Archives presents a cosmic horror double feature, and we got even more stuff coming out. We're going to have 4 or 5 different books coming out by next year, so everybody stay tuned for that and go over to thebizarrearchives.com and get yourself a copy if you don't already got one. But Andre, Tristan, it's been a minute. How you guys doing?
It has been a minute. I'm doing pretty good, Dave.
Excellent. I'm doing pretty good myself.
Awesome. So tonight we are going to talk about the Aesir and the Vanir, or the Aesir, right? We're going to talk about the tribes of the gods and the differences between them and the history behind them and how they appear in the lore and the modern interpretations of them and what part of those interpretations are right, what parts are wrong, and we're going to get into all that kind of stuff. So, Mr. Tristan, tell us about who are the Aesir and who are the Vanir.
Well, the Aesir and the Vanir make up the two main tribal components of the Gothin, which are the gods, the divine forces of our northern tradition. Broadly speaking, we could define the Aesir as Odin and his sons and his immediate family. So these are people like Odin himself, Thor, Baldur, all of his own lineage, his own sons, in a patriarchal sense, right? The Vanir is a much, much more different and more limited group. Almost all of the gods are part of the Aesir by default. But the Vanir are primarily the sons of Njord, or the children of Njord, I should say. Njord, Freyr, Freya, also Njord's parents and grandparents, Nott and Dellinger, Lindagr is his uncle. All of these people are amongst the Vanir, and presumably there is some indication that the Vanir have a much larger, numerous pantheon, but we don't have any direct attestation for most of these people.
And talking about the Aesir and the Vanir, Who are kind of like what? Who make up the Aesir and the Vanir? Because this is something that gets talked about a lot. Like marriage maybe moves this god or goddess over here, and this and that. What really solidifies one of the gods or goddesses into one of these tribes?
Right, it's primarily a paternal patriarchal lineage. People have their lineage based on their father's heritage, and there are two different heritages going on. Roughly speaking, there is the heritage from Njord and the heritage from Odin as competing forces.
Yeah, and as we read in the Eddas, right, we see that these two tribes begin to intermix, right?
Right. This is very much the case. After the Aesir and Vanir War, which we'll talk about a little bit later, the two tribes have completely intermixed, and Njord and his children have come to live amongst the Aesir, and they've formalized an alliance amongst themselves after that.
Yeah.
And we could honestly say that after that, the difference between the Aesir and the Vanir is entirely an internal political matter. From the outside perspective, they are all just the Gothen after that.
So, and we're going to talk about this as well. There's folks out there that say that they are Vana true and stuff like that. And this is just not historically attested. This is not an accurate thing. This is a completely modern, new agey kind of made up thing.
Yeah, folks say a lot of things, don't they?
Yeah, they do say a lot of things. So now that we kind of covered who the Aesir and the Vanir are, let's talk about what separates them, what makes them different. Like, what is their nature? I know it gets brought up a lot that the Aesir are considered to be like the gods of heaven, and I sort of think a lot of this is like carryover from Greco-Roman stuff, right? You have your Olympian gods, and then you have your Chthonic gods. Whereas the Germanic pantheons don't really have this. All of the gods are Chthonic gods for in the Germanic sense. But a lot of folks, they'll describe it as these are the sky gods and these are the earth gods. The Aesir are the gods of heaven, and the Vanir are the gods of below, right? Tristan, what do you think about that interpretation?
I mean, as you said, it just very much does not function at all within the Germanic mindset. In fact, even though the Vanir could be and said are and often are said to follow some sort of Chthonic tradition of being, you know, nature earth deities, they are in fact also intimately connected with the sky. For instance, the Alfar are one of the main supernatural beings that are very closely aligned with the Vanir and their heritage. Freyr is considered to be their king, their prince. And the Vanir also primarily, the Ljósofar, the Light Alfar, primarily live in the heavens, in the sky, amongst the sun and the stars in the sky. So, I mean, you can see that there's very much no common thread that would link them towards any sort of earthy, subterranean nature as in the classical tradition. So I would reject that entire hypothesis just up and up.
So where did they get that? Okay, before we go a little any further, kind of, I hear the word Chthonic get used a lot, and I think a lot of times this word has been brought into our awareness and brought into its commonality or its common use because of fiction, namely, you know, guys like Lovecraft who described the like certain entities as Chthonic because it's a really old timey spooky word, right? So a lot of times folks will use that word, and I feel that they might not completely understand the connotation of it, what exactly it means. Tristan, what does Chthonic mean?
Well, Chthonic means, first and foremost, only that these gods receive blood sacrifice. That is primarily the identification used within Greek traditions. Which, as you can see, doesn't play very well in the Germanic tradition whatsoever, because all of the gods and all of the deities and even the Alfar receive blood sacrifice. There simply is no other tradition within Bloat.
Yeah, and the Chthonic also...
I should...
Go ahead.
I mean, I should explain further that within the Greek tradition, the what's referred to as the Olympian method of sacrifice is effectively... to take fat and blood from various, like an animal sacrifice, and wrap it in foil, and then burn that so that the gods get the aroma and the smoke from the sacrifice. So there's no actual like killing of a being, especially people. Whereas actual bloody sacrifice was considered to be a darker sort of thing. Its main association with the underground or darkness actually stems from the practice that it was traditionally done within caves or other subterranean dwellings. But it also has to be said that even in the Greek tradition, almost all, if not most, of the Olympian deities have cognate Chthonian, I guess we could call them avatars. Like, there is a Zeus Chthonios that he also receives blood sacrifice, and it's not a different person. It's just Zeus.
That's interesting. I never heard that before. But
I think...
Go ahead, Andre.
No, I was thinking that this might actually have a root in another different problem altogether. It's because a lot of people who do look at things like mythology, especially comparative mythology, they like looking at the Greek and the Roman model of things and see how it works and then try to apply it. This is why you also end up in a lot of academic speculation of, for instance, these Norse gods, where they fit in as in the spectrum of gods, because usually they have this... People have this idea that a pantheon needs certain gods for certain things. Like, you got your sky god, you got your war god, you got your agricultural god, and then you have your minor gods of weird small stuff like maybe sailing, fishing, pottery, all that stuff that you could easily find in Greek mythology and Roman. However, there's a... Most of the Germanic gods, they tend to defy this classification. They don't easily fit into just a single or even a few roles. Most gods have multiple major roles.
Yeah. Right, and I've talked about this concept at length before in our past episodes. It really is a categorization detail or an error here. As I've mentioned, it's not actually correct to think of Thor as the god of thunder. I mean, we could say that, and it's not terrible if you want to use that just for, like, casual purposes, right? But yeah. Thor isn't literally a personification of thunder, and that's his domain. Thor is just Thor, and he has lots of different attributes about him, including, amongst other things, thunder.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And this leads to some pretty bad interpretive things. Like, for example, anything associated with storms automatically gets pinned to, you know, the Thor, when in actuality, Odin is also a god of storms. There's multiple gods of storms. Njord is a god of storms. You know, it's not like
one of the worst issues for their categorization thing, because they like to portray the Aesir as being like a warlike pantheon and the Vanir as being a very peaceful, pacifistic farming pantheon. Except this really stops being the case when you notice that, like, Njord is known poetically as a great warrior, and his name is actually a synonym for warrior. And he rules over people. He's literally called the sinless ruler of man. Freyr is called Folkvodigotha, literally the field marshal of the gods. He rules the gods' armies. Freya is, of course, a great warrior. She's a shield maiden in that tradition. Like, these are not actually peaceful pantheons, and the correlation with them just doesn't fit whatsoever.
Yeah, there's this narrative that's gotten woven that the Aesir are these, like, invading, oppressive kind of people, and they came in and they oppressed the poor Vanir, who are these earthy kind of shamanistic types, and that's just not the case at all.
No, it's not the case, and it stems from the old tradition from Gimbutas and her idea of a matrilineal pre-Indo-European Europe that was like an agrarian mother-worshipping society, and this just straight up did never exist. Like, it's not even considered to be in good academic repute at this point, and it hasn't been for like 40 years.
Yeah. There's never been matriarchal society. It has never happened.
No, matriarchal societies literally do not exist anywhere.
Yeah, it's completely made up. Yeah, Maria Gambutas is what her name was. She just completely made that up. And the remnants, and the one of the problems is this: the remnants of her theory kind of live on today, even through guys that you think are, like, you know, based in Folkbild. They'll still have some remnants of her theory, because what happened was in the early stages of the some call the pagan revival, which was this kind of big tent goofy thing, and you had Wiccans in there and druids in there, and, you know, all these kind of stuff. These folks grabbed onto, you know, feminism, and they grabbed onto counterculture stuff, and, you know, there is the feminist very much loved Maria Gambutas's interpretation of this, which, even though it's completely false, they latched onto it, and it just kind of became common speech. It just became part of the.
Well, I mean, to be fair, during the 60s and 70s, early on in the academic community, Gambutas and her theory was considered to be academically mainstream. Like, it wasn't, everyone didn't believe it, but it was considered normal to believe that, very reputable, no one would have batted an eye. And it's just over the decades, as evidence has started contradicting this and no evidence whatsoever has come about supporting it, it's just fallen out of good reputation, and now it's basically no one talks about it except in radical feminist circles.
Yeah.
But exactly. The pagan groups and stuff never really got the message because, you know, they don't have their fingers on the pulse of the academic community, so to speak. They're living in the past.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people in these pagan communities that still have this idea that, you know, this is not really a religion, it's a counterculture. So this idea of this feminist utopia of an agrarian tribe of gods who are not like the big scary mean ones who do the wars all the time, despite the fact that they have three war gods themselves. They latched onto this idea, and they have been perpetuating these myths without much regard for anything else, pretty much.
Yeah. And what this has led to is just like a big problem with interpretation and stuff like that. You know, going back to what we were talking about, like, with the Chthonic, as Andre just mentioned, the Vanir have war gods. In fact, all of the gods are war gods. All of the gods are agrarian gods. You know why? Because our ancestors were warfaring agrarian people. So all of the gods represent this. You know what I mean? It's inescapable. So when you go back and you look at, for example, we're talking about Chthonic, and how the Greco-Roman people had this separation. Part of the reason why they probably had this separation is because they weren't urbanized people. You had people that were living that were like how we are today, like completely separated from agrarian life. They didn't have, you had tons of people that lived in inner city Greece or the city of Rome that have never slaughtered an animal. They're not quite as bad as us, where you have people now that don't even know where meat comes from. They still went down to the butcher and saw, but they themselves never did it. So over time, they got soft and they got feminized, and they didn't want to get their little hands dirty. And I don't even want to say feminized, because
say feminized, because that's a problem even in the modern day, where people who don't want to do animal sacrifice, it's always because they're wanting to placate the women amongst them.
But, you know, if you go to an agrarian society, you got moms and sisters and everything just, like, slashing throats of the animals and gutting them. And, like, you know, you see it all the time in agrarian society. Women do slaughters, too. So it's not like, you know,
it's very much a Western modern tradition that women have become. They think that, like, death is icky.
Yeah. Yeah, there's actually societies where women exclusively did the slaughter stuff. That was like their domain, was to care for the animals and the livestock and to slaughter them and prepare the food and, you know, to make sure it was clean, because women were considered clean, right? So there's societies where that was like. So I don't even want to say that I'll just say it's pussy. Let's just say that these Greek and Roman people that were urbanized became pussies, and they didn't know how to slaughter animals. They thought it was icky and yucky and gross. So eventually, over time, these urbanized people started to see, like, blood sacrifice and stuff as something that's a little bit not cool. And also, you know, going back to the deities, the pantheons, having all of these different domains about them. Chthonic, the word chthonic also implies living in the underworld or having to do with afterlife, right? It has to do with being a psychopomp, which means a deity that takes you to your afterlife. All of our deities, almost, not I don't want to say all, but many of our deities have to have dealings in our afterlives as well.
And to add to that, there is a very common trap that you see both academics and other practitioners often fall into as well, is that they like to, either because of an inability to put it away or because it's a willful type of ignorance almost, to see these stories and these myths, these religions and gods in the light of a very modern lens. And that's why you get such ideas like, oh, war gods, they're brutal because they do war and war is bad. We must not forget that our ancestors loved a good war once in a while. Our ancestors lived for that.
People loved war in the ancient period. Like, that was the best thing that ever happened to most, like, dirt poor peasants. They got to kill someone and take their stuff. And that was the greatest thing ever.
Everybody fought wars. As you mentioned, with the Romans and the Greeks, they had a war season where people would go out in the field, you'd have a small army on both sides, they'd poke each other with spears, they'd go home and do their harvest. For most of Germanic life, everybody was at war at any given time, because at any time another tribe could come and take your stuff. So you wanted to be the bigger tribe so you could take all the people's stuff.
So Tacitus actually records, and I'll paraphrase because I don't have the quote in front of me, that the Germanic people only ever get their economics, their food and everything through war and rapine. That is, they basically raid everyone for all of their stuff. And actually, they consider farming and plowing the earth to be servile and stupid.
Yeah, they pretty much just went to war, took a bunch of slaves, brought them home, and then put the slaves to work doing the dirty agricultural business while they just slept and drank and ate the day away until the next war came around.
Their worldview was very much, why should I have to break my back for like 3 months out of the year when I could just kill you and take what you did? And that's literally, they thought that if you were the one working, well, it's because you were stupid. I obviously have the better method.
Now, to be fair, Tacitus, he was dealing with one, or like a grouping of tribes, right? He wasn't that's not for across the board of all Germanic society. You know, quite a few Germanic societies were agricultural societies, and of course they had slaves, but to be a farmer wasn't considered to be like lowly among every single, you know, tribe.
I mean, we're probably dealing with a very warrior-centric perspective on what they should be doing. Let's put it that way.
Yeah,
there was a caste within Germanic society that their main job was to raid people, and they had a higher social standing because they were jarls, and they thought that raiding people was the shit. So,
and also you got to keep in mind the tribes that Tacitus were dealing with were the tribes that were at the Roman border. They've been fighting Rome for the last 1,000 years. You know, what I mean, of course they're going to be more war-centric. Like, they're not going to
But he does mention that all of the tribes have this custom where if they're not at war with one of the other people, all of their young men will basically just go off as mercenaries, and this practice does seem to have quite a bit of historical and archaeological attestation, so it's probably true.
So,
happened quite a bit for the Vikings, too.
Right, I mean, they also had, like, a war season where every year you'd go raid so-and-so and then come back with all your goodies and then go back to, like, farming and your livestock, and that's just what people did every year. It wasn't like people were full-time Vikings. It was a very seasonal occupation.
Yeah,
and if there was no war to fight, there was always a war somewhere. You could just go to Sweden and kill a few Danes if you felt like it, or if you were fancy, you could go down to Russia.
All right. They have very nice slaves in Russia.
Before we go too far into this kind of stuff, let's going back to the Aesir and the Vanir. So, if Tristan, if you could like kind of define what, as far as characteristics and like nature and stuff like this, Are there any sort of attributes that do separate them as two groups?
Yeah, there does seem to be an attribute of the Vanir in which they have an association with sort of a primordial natural component. Freyr is a god of the sun. Njord is a god of the water. Njord's mother is not. She's the god of the night. Mm-hmm. His father is Delinger. He's the god of the day. Dagr is also the day, literally, as in the coming of the day after night. So you see a sort of primordial attestation for them as involved very heavily with the natural processes of the world. Whereas the main Aesir are generally more conceptual based. They have things like Thor with strength and thunder and protection, right?
Yeah.
Thor is actually probably the one that crosses over the most, but you basically see what I'm getting with at here.
Sure.
It's not a hard scale categorization like they would try to make it, but it does have some roots in truth.
Yeah.
Also, we could probably say that it does seem like the Vanir in general tend to be much more serious than the Aesir do. At least in the sense that the only times we ever see the Vanir speaking, they seem to speak in, like, oracular prophecy. And they have a very grim outlook of things, whereas we could almost call it depressive, really. But the Aesir tend to be much more boisterous than what you would consider to be, like, an outgoing Viking-ish persona.
Now that you mention it, that there is, like, a very prominent theme that goes on in a lot of stories that involves Njord, Frey, and Freya, especially, there's always like a very deep sense of either longing or loss or something like that. Like there is a melancholy to them.
A melancholy is the term I would use, yeah. I mean, that's probably just their personality, right? Because we're mostly dealing with like a generation of a single family, Njord and his children.
So, moving on. There's a very important event that happens in the lore when it comes to the Aesir and the Vanir, and this is something that is attested in other Indo-European traditions as well. And this is the Aesir-Vanir War. There was a war between them at one point. Tristan, could you tell us about that?
Right. So the Aesir and the Vanir War is recorded in the Germanic tradition as the first war within the world. And it was fought over the Aesir denying the Vanir the right to receive worship from the people. The Vanir believed that they should receive their proper due of worship, and they had a war over this. Here's the part where people generally come astray, because they don't realize this, but it's very well attested. The Vanir won that war. They broke the walls of Asgard and were triumphant. That's why we continue today. We worship the Vanir alongside the Aesir, because that was the terms of the War Peace Treaty.
And this also appears in the Hindu stuff, right?
I mean, there are attempts to sort of have some sort of comparative thing going along here, but most of the time, you end up with some sort of Titanomachy as the Aesir Vanir War, and I'm not sure I generally agree with that as an identification.
And why is that?
Well, the Titanomachy would generally portray the Vanir as being enemies or demons, which of course is not the case within the Germanic tradition.
Okay. And what you're saying, Titanomachy, what's that mean?
Basically the war between the Titans and the gods.
So you're saying that the Aesir-Vanir War is a completely unique Germanic thing, and you are not convinced that it has to do with the Olympian Titan War or the...
I am not convinced by that, and generally speaking, I would actually reject it because it doesn't fit very well. There's actually a very difficult attempt to have any sort of cognates between the Vanir and any other sort of Indo-European tradition. Like, it's not immediately obvious what they would actually be. even though many gods of the Vanir are found within the wider Indo-European tradition, it's the organization and the group of the Vanir themselves are very hard to place.
So you also that's interesting because you identify, you know, Agni as Freyr, and then also Indra as Thor and Shiva as Odin, right?
Correct.
So that would mean that they're the Vedic grouping, the Vedic organization of their pantheon is just completely different.
Well, more or less, because we also see in the Nordic tradition that Thor, Odin, and Freyr make up the primary trinity of deities that everyone worshipped, and they were the most prominent of deities. And this is also the case in the early Vedic period. The deities that everyone worshipped primarily were Rudra, Indra, and Agni.
So when does Shiva come into the mix?
Rudra and Shiva are the same being.
Okay. All right, that makes sense. So, talking about the Vanir winning the war and being worthy of worship, why is it that they are now considered the Gothen now?
Well, after the peace treaty, part of the terms was that they would be unified in a single political apparatus and all receive worship. The Vanir came into Asgard to live amongst the gods, and after that, they are considered a single institution, effectively. In fact, this was probably signed through marriage. It really heavily depends on your interpretation of whether Frigg is Nerthis or Freya. Of course, I take the position that she is, in fact, Freya. But it doesn't particularly change the issue that Odin married the Vanir woman, and that is effectively signing the treaty there.
Yeah, I'm in the camp that I do believe that Frigg is Nerthis. I believe that.
Right. I mean, lots of people do take that position, but it doesn't meaningfully change it because Nerthis is Njord's sister wife, so it's effectively just skipping a generation or not. It doesn't really change the political outlook.
Yeah. So, talking about these two tribes of deities and kind of their differences, and the Vanir being worthy of worship, we then get into the cultic differences of these two tribes, you know, historically.
Right. There is a bit of a, we can see there's a cultic difference in a geological sense, for instance, or geographical, I meant. For instance, the worship of Freyr is very prominent in Sweden. He was the head of their royal household. And with the worship of Freyr, we tend to have other deities that are grouped along with him, like Njord, Freya, Skathi for some reason, and also Ullr. Whereas the Odinic cult tends to worship Odin, Thor, Baldur, and that sort of thing. Whereas it was mostly prominent in Denmark. And also some areas of southern Norway. But also northern Norway was very much, actually kind of where Andre lives, was actually a major center of the Vanir cult as well.
So you're saying that there was a historical time where they worshipped these two tribes a little bit differently?
It's hard to say exactly what the differences are between them. We know that their primary deific identifications were skewed between Odin and Freyr primarily. Thor seems to be worshipped primarily by the lower classes, like the peasant farming folk. They don't enter the historical record as often because most of historically what we have available to us is from the nobility. But amongst the nobility, they were very much skewed between Odin and Freyr, and they don't appear to be very hostile to each other. Like, it's not in the same way as like in modern Hinduism, where the worshippers of Shiva and the worshippers of Vishnu kind of have entirely separate lineages and sectarian strife and all that sort. There doesn't appear to be any sort of violence or tension along that lines, but we do know that they did primarily have a a tendency to worship different gods and maybe even a little differently. For instance, in the temples of Freyr, we know that they were often had a godwife in which a woman was in charge of the temple who was considered to be ritually married to Freyr. And this was considered to be highly unusual amongst the general northern tradition because women weren't allowed to be temple priests.
I could also say from what I've been able to dig up around the areas of central and northern Norway, but the cult of Njord oftentimes crossed over with the, to some limited degree, the cult of Freya rather than Frey in some cases. But these were mainly located around settlements or cities where major trade routes were sent out from. So that makes sense why the worship of Njord would be so prominent in the area of both wealth and seafaring. But the worship of Freya is a bit more puzzling rather than for Frey. As Tristan mentioned, you saw some overlap down in, for instance, in southern Norway, where there was some spillover from both Denmark and Sweden. So you end up with a little bit of a mixture between the cult of Frey and the cult of Odin down there.
Yeah, I mean, I would also take the position that Freyr worship was very common there because during the early settlement period of Iceland, we know that there was very prominent families that are very clearly Freyr worshippers because it's even a plot point in several sagas. One of the instances where a woman is running a temple to Freyr, and it happens to be a political issue because they refuse to accept her as a Gothi. It becomes very prominent, and also there's a lot of names that have a sort of Ing derivation, which is a reference to Yngvi Freyr, like Ingvald, Ingmar, Ingvar. These things are kind of like you would say Thorstein is obviously a veneration of Thor, right? But these, I guess I should explain that the early settlement of Iceland primarily came from like mid to northern Norway. So these are where these people would have been coming from.
Yeah, of course, like I never said, like the worship of Frey didn't happen, but it seems like the worship of Freya was more prominent than you would see other places. Like it wasn't that she was like the major cult figure, but it was like almost on an equal level together with Frey. Like she was more prominent than you'd see down for in all the places.
I generally take the position that the worship of Freya was always very prominent, and it's just a lack of historical evidence that we actually have to this.
Well, probably.
So, but now that you're pointing out that there was a historical difference between the cults of the Vanir and the cults of the Ice Eater, why are people wrong today to say that they are, say, Vanatru or whatever?
Right. Well, they're primarily wrong because they're assuming that there is a great schism in religious theological tradition, cosmology, or adherence. At no point in time were there people who decided, I'm going to worship only the Vanir and I don't worship Odin and his people. Like, this wasn't a thing that happened. There was no sort of sectarian strife amongst them. People who worshipped Freyr didn't have a different cosmology or understanding of theology than people who worshipped Odin.
Would you say that a Freyr cult also worshipped Odin?
Yes, absolutely.
So it wasn't like henotheism or some kind of actual sectarian difference. It was just this deity is sort of our matron or patron, and we just pay more attention to them.
Correct. I mean, I worship Freyr primarily as a sort of patron deity, right? But I also worship Odin. Like, there's no difference between the two. It's not a henotheistic sense in which it changes the theological structure.
So, you would say that people that refer to themselves as Vanatru are incorrect?
Absolutely incorrect. In fact, I would go outright and say that the hardline Vanatru who say that they don't worship the Aesir are being manifestly blasphemous.
And why would you say that?
Because they are denying the worship and the divinity of most of the deities of our people. This is absolutely impious and blasphemous.
But they would argue that, like as you pointed out, that there was a cultic difference. There was a difference in the cults between the Aesir and the Vanir as far as praxis or practice go.
I mean, there is no recorded practical difference between them. The only difference we have is that they venerated one of them as a patron deity more intensely.
Yeah. So, yeah, I agree with you. I'm just saying I'm trying to argue from their point of view because they use exactly what you said, this historical example of having a matron or a patron deity, which is something that we see across all Indo-European religions, right? We see even in Greece. What was the word for it? The something polis or whatever. They had a deity that would bless an entire city. They were the patron or matron of the city. And then underneath that, you would have a deity of certain, I forget what their word is, but their clans and their houses and certain, but they had a little bit of separation between what deities were venerated where and why and how and all that kind of stuff. However, there was no separation. We worship this and we deny the divinity of them.
And that's very much how it is in the Germanic tradition as well. There's no hard separation and denial of divinity of the other sorts. There's no dramatic change in customs or practice. It's not like the Vanir refused to do animal sacrifice. In fact, Freyr actually invented human sacrifice. I just want to put that out there.
So, my argument is it's like, so not only is it not historically attested, is not a real thing, it's being Vanatru or you know, more even more ridiculous, Rockatru. Like, we should do a whole show. I actually think we did do a show talking about that. But this, not only is this not true, not only is it not historically attested, it's not useful. It's not a useful distinction. It's still this. It's still using the same source material. It's still believing in the same cosmology. It's still the same exact thing. It's literally just a made up, invented, sectarian, modern LARP for people to separate an already very small, religion into these like meaningless little groups. That, like,
yeah, it's people who want to be their own special little snowflake and come up with some reason why they don't have to follow your rules.
That's exactly it. You just nailed it there. So why do you think people want to do that?
I think it's just a holdover custom from neo-paganism in general. People have a very narcissistic, self-idealized version of what their religious practice is going to be, and it basically defaults to whatever I already believe in. The neo-pagan countercultural movement is very self-oriented.
Yeah. Yeah, it presupposes individualism. It's inherently liberal. There's nothing traditional about it. That's why, you know, folks out there that may not be heathens and are listening to us talk and you mistakenly refer to us as neo-pagans, you get an earful. And that's the reason why.
I mean, I try not to be too hard on the people who like mistakenly refer to me as a neo-pagan. But yeah, I would consider that to be offensive and I would deny the label.
That's probably the worst label.
Yeah.
That probably offends me more than any other kind of label.
A lot of these people who end up wanting to, well, honestly, one of the arguments I've seen for why some people chose that they wanted to be Vanatru instead of Asatru, as they put it, was because, of course, that would, it's basically the same thing, except you're just doing the opposite side, because a Vanatru, you believe in the Vana gods, but if you're an Asatru, you believe in the Asa gods.
There is definitely a tradition within the Vanatru community where the Vanir, they basically accepted Gimbutas's claim, and they view the Vana gods as a more pacifistic, female-oriented, peaceful culture, as opposed to the warlike Germanic culture. And the people who are I'm going to be real. It's mostly like the druidic neo-pagan sorts who are very, they're very fluffy. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. The weird they part is that they all... Oh, sorry, you can go on.
Right, I was saying that they're very fluffy and effectively they are very uncomfortable with some of the darker and more masculine aspects of the Germanic faith.
And then Frey comes along and invents human sacrifice. I'm not sure this...
It doesn't necessarily work real good, but at that point you're involving too much of these people.
And one of the more ridiculous things I've seen is that they kind of do it, they don't directly say so, but they kind of do it out of this almost weird underdog type, because everybody wants to be feel like they're special, and they view the Vana gods as underdogs. Now, even seeing them say that it was the Asa gods who were the aggressors in the war, and that the Vana gods ultimately lost said war and were dominated by the Asa gods, which we have kind of already attested right now. That's not true.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure where it came from that the Asa gods won the Asir Vanir war. I think it's just an assumption people have, because they're the main deific group, right? But it's very well attested that the Vana gods won the war.
Yeah. And, you know, another group that we see this kind of thing in, I've seen this before. Everybody, hold on to your seats. The Vargtards, they like to grab onto this, like, it's like literally the same thing as the hippy-dippy neo-pagans, except it's like, they also like include Nordicism, and their whole argument is that the Vanir gods were the true like Neanderthal original European gods, and that Odin and the Aesir were Jewish.
So, Dave, I'd like to ask your opinion.
Yeah.
So, if Njord is the patriarch of the Vanir people, does that mean that Njord is the placenta?
Yeah. yeah. They got it all wrong.
We got something here.
Oh, my God.
Let's hope Mark's not listening to this. He's going to get ideas.
Yeah, well, he can stick it up his ass. It doesn't matter. But it's like...
Njord's powers over water represents the water of the womb.
Yeah. Oh, God. Retards.
I mean, you guys can see how ridiculous this is. Like, don't listen to Varg, guys. It's stupid.
Yeah. Oh my God. When I first heard that theory that Odin is Jewish and an infiltrator into the pantheon, and the Vanir deities were the original Europeans, I thought it was a troll. I thought, I was like, this guy's like some sort of like Christian or atheist troll or something. No, they were serious about it, and they wrote...
The only time I've ever actually heard that is from Christian identity sorts, and these people are a level of cope and stupidity that I can't even fathom.
Oh, Don, they're just... Oh, my God. The identity people, they're like... Even, like, other Christians think that they're ridiculous. It's...
Yeah, I mean, they're absolutely retarded.
Denmark is named after the tribe of Dan.
They say that?
Yeah, they say that.
Their basis of the idea is they're effectively white supremacists who believe that white people are the lost tribe of Israel.
Jews.
it's literally the vast right people, except with like Nordicists.
This
is crossing all kinds of borders.
Tribe of Dan. Yeah, that's they have.
I need to remember that.
Yeah, they have so many like goofy theories like that. I've read they think that that Jesus was the son of Julius Caesar and Cleopatra. I've like some really. Like made up goofy crazy stuff. It's
and that's one of their more realistic theories.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I've heard about that one.
That's crazy. All right, boys. Well, we're coming up on the end here. Would you like to say anything in conclusion?
No, I think I pretty much covered it all.
All right. Don't be Vana true. Yeah. And don't, and, yeah. and don't, and, And don't listen to Varg, please. Just
that covers it. Yep.
Yeah.
I love how like Varg, like the Varg people think that they're the real, you know, blah, blah, but really what they are just like repackaged like Wicca. It's like literally it's just like materialist Wicca.
Do you know how far we've won when instead of like rationally debating and getting angry over Varg, the second you say his name, everyone just starts laughing.
Yeah, what a clown.
Every time I hear his name now, I just picture that picture of him sitting in his car with a bucket over his head, and that's like that's the man you're listening to right now.
I can't ever get it out of my head that time he tried to say that Santa was the placenta. That's all I ever think about.
Yeah, no. Santa was Santa is a fetus, and he wears a red suit because of blood, and you drink cranberry juice because of period blood. That's like the theory, and the chimney is like the womb. Santa is coming through the chimney out to give you presents. Is a baby being born? That's the theory.
Don't listen to Varg, people.
Dude, it's crazy. It's crazy.
No, or Varg's wife. Don't listen to her either.
She might be worse. Oh my god! I tried to read her book, the Clan of the She Bear or whatever. That is like, oh my god! I can't read this. You people made that. Hey, you know what? You know what she says is her source. She says she got it from interpreting her dreams. It's like you're crazy. Interpreting your dreams. Oh, like
What's your citation? I once dreamed this.
Yeah. Dude, when I had my debate with Varg, when he was like trolling my YouTube channel and everything, I asked him what I was like, dude, what's your source for this? He, you know what he told me? He says, I remembered. Why? Good. What does that even mean? You remembered?
He was there, Dave.
He was there. He was there.
I was there 3,000 years ago.
Yeah, the immortal Varg. Jesus Christ.
I saw the she-bear.
Maybe he's a vampire or something. I don't know. Maybe that's why he hates Italians so much, because he's scared he's going to get too close to some garlic. All right, so this is it for tonight, guys. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in this evening. We will be back next week at 6 p.m. Eastern, Friday, here on the Bog, Dave Martell YouTube channel, as well as Odyssey. If you want to get the RSS feed to listen to the audio of every single show that we do in your car, on your commutes, at the gym, or at work, you can go to patreon.com/thebog and sign up. There's a tier for everybody, $5 all the way up to $50, and you can get a sticker or a mug, all kinds of stuff. Patreon.com/thebog. Help us keep the lights on. Help me get a new computer so we can upgrade and I can put the camera back on and we can do all kinds of stuff. So go over to Patreon, check it out. But if you want to support the Bog another way, make sure to shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop and check out some sweet merch. Winter's coming. Get yourself a Bog hoodie. Come on. Everybody wants a Bog hoodie. We got knitted hats. We got all kinds of stuff. So go over to shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop and check out some sweet Bog merch. You want to support one of our friends, make sure you go to facebook.com/ironagejodish and check out some authentic ancient Vedic astrology. It's super cool, bro. I'm telling you guys, it's not that goofy, you know, Starbucks, like, Mercury's in retrograde, or like whatever those girls. It's not that. It's really, really excellent. I was skeptical. I got a reading. It blew my mind. He predicted that I broke my knee as an adolescent, which I did because I was jumping BMX bikes and I broke my knee. And he also predicted that I have nightmares about snakes. I've never said those things on it. Fiction authors in the genres of fantasy, sci-fi, and cosmic horror. We got issue 2 coming out very, very soon. We have Bizarre Kives Presents, a cosmic horror double feature. We have the Chronicles of Heraldria, which is a full-on epic fantasy novel series. We got all kinds of cool stuff coming out, boys. So go check out thebizarrearchives.com and get yourself a copy. If you loved your copy, go over to Amazon or Books A Million and leave us a review. Tell us what your favorite Andre, hail to you guys, and hail to each and every one of you bog lords and bog maidens out there that continue to support us and tune in. We love and appreciate you guys. Also, hail, and I'll see you guys next week. Hail.